Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever time it is that you're listening to this podcast again.
They messed up already.
I know. This is Keelan Henson and...
Joe Hill. Good to be with you again.
And we want to welcome you to another edition of Synergy. Again, we are here to debate, to talk about, to contemplate consciousness, spirituality, love, life, health, wellness, and everything else in between and all around, okay? So we thank you for joining us on the show, okay? And we just gonna hop right into it. Today we're debating about what to talk about, and I had an interesting, before I came in, I had an interesting interaction with a neighbor of mine.
So on the conspiracy thing first. We were talking. We got into this reason. We're kind of already in this kind of energy vibe we're in because we got to talking, just talking about this particular thing, and we realized that as much as we were getting into it, we may as well, you know, roll tape. So start with the conspiracy thing. We'll work backward on the other stuff we talked about because that's when we started. That was when we said stop. Let's start recording.
Okay. So. Yeah. So I teach a conspiracy theory class, and one of the things that one of the initial questions that we ask is, why is it that some believe in conspiracy theories and others don't? Okay, and a lot of literature and research says that, you know, people believe in conspiracy theory, the lower your position or status in society, the more likely you are to believe in conspiracy theory. Yeah. Okay, because you're looking for a justification for because of why you have nothing. Okay,
right, right.
So ultimately, as we kick these ideas around, and then I come back and I say, well, I don't know if I necessarily believe it. I think that poor people and the disenfranchised have a reason to believe in conspiracy theory because real stuff has happened to poor people over time.
Oh, definitely,
okay.
Definitely.
Tuskegee, I mean, Black Wall Street, they blew up Black Wall Street,
oh,
the human radiation experiments.
Yeah.
Like, real things have happened to poor people, so poor people have a reason to be paranoid if we are paranoid, okay?
Right.
And then...
pick a coal field.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So we come and we say, I always ask the question, does it come down to power and control? Is it that people don't want to believe that conspiracy theories exist? Because then if there is this overarching they, that means that I have no control over my life, that anybody can do. If there is someone out there that is powerful, that can control oil, that can control wealth, or whatever the case may be, then ultimately I really have no control, and anything can happen to me, anything can happen to us, and I think that not having control scares people.
Yeah. So here's why I wanted to start the tape, because I felt like even if there isn't a they that's controlling all this miserable shit, excuse my language, to me, equally overwhelming is the fact that there is no concerted, coordinated group doing this, but there are all different kinds of random factors that throw crazy. You know, we talk about you reap what you sow, but the fact is there's all kind of stuff that gets in your field that you didn't put there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? For example, I had somebody steal my wallet out of my car. Now, that does not connect in any way to anything that you know, I was doing.
Yeah.
You know, that's not something that, oh, because I did this in my life, this man knew to come steal my wallet. Shootings. I mean, pick the crazy event. There are multiple influences that may look random, may be random. To me, that's, I don't know, no different than a concerted group causing the misery.
No, wait. So they need, they need to know about my earlier conversation to put what you just said in context.
Yeah.
So before I came, before we came to the studio, I was talking with one of my neighbors. Somehow or another, we started to talk about, he said he was blessed and highly favored. So we got into just being blessed.
Yeah.
Somehow this conversation got, he started to talk about being blessed and some of our other neighbors who lived around us. And, you know, if they knew God like he knew God, they would have what he had, one of the statements that he made.
Yeah.
So it got me to thinking about the statement of being blessed and highly favored. Does that imply that those who aren't blessed, those who don't have, those who unfortunate things happen to, did you in some way, shape, form, or fashion cause those things to happen or to deserve it?
Right.
And that was what seemed to be implied, what he was implying was because of his relationship with God, he was blessed. So other people who, like, you're doing something to make these things happen to you. Now, you might not know what these things are, but you are actively or have actively done something that have made these things happen.
Right.
So then it made me think about, well, I wonder what this guy thinks about slavery. I wonder what this guy thinks about the Holocaust. Like, these are people, like, they were slaves born into this situation that, or hurricanes.
Right. Yeah.
Like, but there are people who have done nothing. There were slaves that were just born into that situation.
Right. I just got here and I started in this situation. Yeah.
So what is he saying? That we are doomed to suffer the consequences of what our forefathers did?
Yeah.
Or, you know what I mean? Like, so I don't,
the problem is all these sins get preached in different places. And there's such a toss salad of theologies that work so hard at trying to explain misfortune, and at the same, well, sometimes it's not the same person, but at the same time, there are a lot of voices that try to pimp your maybe sincere feeling of devotion toward God for their purposes, because when you talk about getting blessed and highly favored, as it's preached about, it typically includes you sending some money back toward the preacher who did the sermon about being blessed and highly favored. In other words, if you want to get in that club, you've got to sow a seed of faith with me, or you've got to do this thing or that thing. And so there's so much confusion and salesmanship around this whole idea. It very much is counter. It may sound strange to hear someone says, but as far as the texts of Christianity, it's very much counter to the body of text. Now, people might not like to hear this say this, but the Bible is not a coherent systematic theology.
Boy, there are the, getting trouble.
Well, I'm just telling you. And if you want to debate that with me, if someone hears that, let's just take a real simple comparison. In the Psalms, you hear a lot about how much God is favoring the righteous, and I've never seen the righteous go without bread or be forsaken or struggle or strain. And then you have the book of Job, also in the Bible. That's not fun to preach about. Yeah. But Job is the one who's identified as the one who is specifically favored. And that is the reason he is going through adversity, that God's allowing that adversity to happen. You get up to the Gospels, and Jesus says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit. Woe to you who are rich, who have stored up money for yourselves. Woe to you who are having a grand old time right now in the midst of everybody else's misery."
Yeah.
In other words, there is a time coming in which the tables will be turned. Now, whether you want to believe that's happening or not, that is Jesus setting up a different value system than a Christian carries. It talks about being blessed and highly favored. Hmm. Because a Christian who's, you know, I got the private jet, et cetera. If you're reading what Jesus has to say, you're reading a Jesus who says, sell all you have and give it to the poor.
Yeah.
You're reading a Jesus who tells you don't get bogged down in riches. Build up treasure for yourselves in heaven, not down here where things corrupt and steal and ruin. You can't hold that as a Christian doctrine and read the things Jesus talks about. The problem is, we're on a different topic now. Most folks don't bother to engage directly with what Jesus has to say. They listen to the pastor. They listen to the pastor. So which can be a problem if you don't think for yourself.
Wow.
All right, so back on track. But there's a reason that epidemic.
Yeah.
That epidemic of thought is so pervasive is because a lot of churches pimp that.
So ultimately, this made me think about what is the nature of whatever the divine is, mm-hmm. What is the nature of it? Again, this is what we was talking about. Like, does it have a direct hand in what's happening on the day-to-day affairs? Are we just here and it's just kind of like y'all have at it?
Yeah.
Like, it's as I speak to people about, even if people who don't believe in God, or they just, like, I look at it as layers. There are people that believe that there is a God.
Yeah.
There is a puppet master in the air.
Right.
Who's pulling strings. And then there are people who, like myself, I don't believe that there is a man or a woman in the air. I believe that there is this presence. There is something larger than us.
Yeah.
That I just call the universe. I just call it the right. universe, whatever right. it is. Right. You know what I'm saying? There is something greater than us that we all are a part of. It is a part of us. We are part of it, and we sprang from it.
Yeah.
Okay? And then there are those that believe in nothing at all.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And there may be some gradations in between. I don't know. But the question is, what is the nature of whatever it is? Does it have a hand? Like, does it have a hand? Is it sitting there counting wishes and answering prayers?
Right.
Are we just here? It exists. There is a man, but he's hands off. There is no man. There is just this sort of large universal something that is larger than us that just sort of birthed us in some sort of way.
Yeah.
Like, it's interesting to hear people's philosophies on the nature. When I say the nature of whatever it is, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And ultimately, I personally believe this. I think whatever it is hands off.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, I tell people all the time, I think we may have talked about this before, whatever it is, it's kind of like if my son would ask me to tie his shoes, I'm saying,
right.
No.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, do it yourself because you know how to do it. Like, I'm not going to do anything for you that you know. So I think a lot of times people's prayers, people sit and they think whatever it is external and on the outside of them, and they pray for something to happen or something to do something for me. And I think a lot of prayers don't get answered because I don't think that whatever it is will put us here to beg.
No, no.
So it's like
from something else or from him or her, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah,
either
yeah.
way, to beg in any direction. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think whatever it is, it's probably, I'm not saying that it can't intervene, but I think whatever it is, if there is something there, it's hands off.
Yeah.
How else would slavery have happened? I don't think that people, there's nothing that anybody could do to deserve slavery. There's nothing that anybody could do to deserve the Holocaust.
Yeah.
There are all these famines and earthquakes and it's all this stuff that happens to people.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything that people do to deserve it. But again, people want to believe that we live in a just world.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There is a rhyme and there is a reason to everything, because if there is no rhyme or reason, it is scary to believe that I could be doing everything right in my life and get cancer.
Right.
I could be doing everything right in my life and get hit by a stray bullet. Like, but, obviously, but you, they did something, or their parents went shit, or their daddy did something. You are suffering. If you didn't do it,
right.
you are suffering from something that somebody down the line did.
There's a couple different things I want to try and pick up in that. Maybe I can work them backwards. Because the one thing that I think about, you know, in some strains of Judaism, I don't want to talk too detailed because I don't claim to be an expert, but at least in some strains of Judaism, there is no afterlife.
Okay.
The whole point of doing what you're supposed to do is because it's what you're supposed to do. the virtue is righteousness in and of itself, to be good because being good is good.
Okay.
If I'm being good because I'm hoping for a give back somewhere, is that actually good, or am I just actually being selfish?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Am I just trying to bank up a divine credit with the good things I do?
Yeah.
Or am I doing them because I appreciate the fact that because it's in my power to do it, I feel an obligation to the world I'm living in to do it? I think of God in that vein more. For example, to be hands-off, but to be, I think, and I believe in a very personal, not just me, but personified God, who then, like a parent, who I'm not tying your shoe, but I'm watching.
Yeah.
Hopefully, maybe excitedly, maybe even straining not to help you, but I am vested. I have a vested interest in you accomplishing the thing that you wanted me to accomplish, but I want to see you do.
Yeah.
And so I think for folks to hear hands off, it's very different from disinterested.
Hmm.
Because
makes
hands
sense.
On can be debilitating.
Yeah.
In fact, we see hands on micromanaging is usually very debilitating.
How do you grow? How do you grow and evolve spiritually, mentally, and emotionally if someone or something is constantly intervening?
Right.
Every step of the way.
Well, it's not really. It's almost a kind of slavery.
Yeah.
If you understand what I mean, I'm just doing this stuff because I don't want you to beat me.
Yeah.
Bottom line, I don't want you to beat me. I want you to put whatever food on my plate I want, the car, the literal food, whatever it is. It's almost somewhere between slavery and indentured servitude.
Okay.
To think about God that way.
Okay, so in that case, this makes me think about the book. This makes me think about religious text. There are those that believe that it is literal.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that debilitating?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Because what happens to my mind, like,
yeah.
What happens to my mind? Like, if everything I'm supposed to, if all the rules, like, would the universe or God or whatever it is give me each and every rule and regulation that I'm supposed to follow? How do I grow mentally? How do I learn to think? How do I learn to, you know what I'm saying? Would it, whatever it is, or whatever God is, put me in a position for my mind to turn to mush because I don't have to think about anything? Everything is right here for me.
Well, and again, this goes back to, I think, sometimes bad, let's say unhealthy, or I'm trying to think of a nice word. I don't need a nice word. Poor religious leadership, poor spiritual leadership that tells you that doing exactly that is your duty and responsibility. To not think, to just turn the whole thing off and just, I'm going to spoon feed you, open your mouth. That's all you got to do.
Yeah.
That is not good. That is not good service to any human being. But that's what they learned from someone else and what someone else taught them. This idea that it is what it is, how it's written is how it's written. And it comes again from this kind of a punishing God idea. That the most important thing for me to do is keep the rules.
Yeah.
So maybe taking it literal means that I do something harmful to someone else, or maybe, I don't know what, you know, you could look at a number of different rules that seem trivial, but here's what I know. If I think about God as a don't get in trouble God, whatever else I do or don't do, if I follow the rules, I won't get beat.
Yeah.
So who cares if I think about them, what I think about them? If this is a God who I think just wants to beat me if I don't get this right, I'm just going to follow the rules.
Makes sense.
Huh. But is that a God who would turn around, just to keep the logic for folks that run in those veins, at least in Christianity, is that the kind of God who then, in the form of his son, would turn around and die for you? And that's why in the early church there was a lot of conflict and heresy about these two different gods, that they couldn't reconcile the two, a God that would be like Jesus and a God that they kept reading about. They figured they must be two different kinds of gods.
Yeah.
And then the church just kind of crushed the heresy, you know, either stop you.
Yeah.
They didn't have great theological discourse. It was just, that's illegal. Don't say it anymore.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's a lot to wrestle through with that. But the literalist often, and they would probably be angry to hear somebody say this, in my experience dealing with literalists, and having spent some time in that phase when I was younger, The main concern is I don't want to get in trouble.
Yeah.
I don't want to be in trouble. And so just tell me the rules. I'll follow the rules. And I don't want to hear from that other badass kid in my class who wants to think about the rules or which rules we shouldn't have to worry about. That's too much to think about. And then my anxiety goes up. If I don't, we're back to control.
Yeah.
We always keep coming back to control. Give me this nice literal box, I will just stay in it and have my peace.
I wonder if the consequences for not following the rules weren't so dire,
yeah,
would people be more willing to think outside the box and think for themselves? I mean, ultimately, I don't think that any society wants a free thinking population anyway.
No.
You know what I mean? But that's probably a whole nother conversation that goes in a lot of different areas that's larger than spirituality and religion and consciousness.
But that's where I take conspiracy, not necessarily orchestrating some grand event or even a number of micro events, but trying to foster a larger sense in your population, whoever it is, whoever the power players are versus the population they rely on, to make sure that population continues to rely on them. Would you call it a conspiracy when the coal companies opened up company stores? You may not call it a conspiracy, but they knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
Because as you use the company store, thank you very much, you're welcome, you keep falling into debt and you have to keep working for me.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily care if you, get broke. That would be evil. Maybe they did want that. But what they definitely wanted was for you to keep working for me. The whole credit card system. Did some group of people go in a back room and plan this? I don't know. But what they do recognize is, hey, my workers will put up with all kind of shit because they got to work because their credit cards are killing them.
Yeah.
Or these students coming out of school, they'll take whatever one pay them because they got loans to pay off.
Yeah.
And so I don't know that, there's some Illuminati group sitting back in the back room playing poker, you know, doing whatever and saying ahead of time, this is the plan. But there are definitely those who recognize the advantage it gives them, and they're in no hurry to undo the system that gives them that advantage.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed. I agree. How do we get all this from?
I don't know. That's why I said roll tape. Because we're all over the place.
But
so then the idea then, I don't know if we can answer this in the show. What is God? To me, my conception of God.
Well, the nature of it.
Yeah, the nature of God. And you can even take this from a less religious type of view where you have this personified God. I'm not so sensitive in my beliefs that I need everybody else to sign on with me. So let me try and meet folks where they might be. Even to think about God as a force, a power, a energy. Okay, energy is wavelength. And so I think even in personified terms about the idea of being in the flow of what God's spirit or that energy is already doing. I need to get on that wavelength. Because that wavelength is the same wavelength that has orchestrated and manages to allow something as big as my thumb to grow into an oak tree. It does not day by day go by and with physical hands pull out branches and leaves. Everything the tree needs to become a tree is there.
Yeah.
If it sets in ground, that is there.
Yeah.
That provides the tree the stuff it needs, in addition to the sun that's out there, to grow. Now, does God then say, I want this branch to go this way and that branch to go that way? Or does God sit back and watch and enjoy watching what the tree becomes?
I like that.
I think about God in that sense. Because the other way to me, maybe it's because I might have mild ADHD, the other way seems incredibly boring.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, what I'm going to do today? I'll make another tree. I'm going to pull the branches this way and that way. But instead, to be someone who I think, in the way I think of things, loves what you have made so much that what you most want is not to hammer it into being some particular thing that where you violate its own sense of being, but instead, to a large degree, you do hands off to behold, but I think also to be that energy, that something that can prompt the better choice, the right choice. For example, with the tree, we all know that if the tree is we can do this with smaller plants, if there's a window where the light is, the plant, without anybody having to make it do anything, arcs itself toward where the light's going to be. It arcs itself toward where the resources are that help to give it life.
Yeah.
And so I feel that way about God, and I feel that way about scripture language that talks about those that sin will die.
Yeah.
I don't think of it in terms of, if you make a mistake, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah.
But the fact is, if you are doing what we call sin, I like the idea of trespass, because trespass means you're somewhere you're not supposed to be.
Yeah.
If you are moving in some direction of life you're not supposed to be in, it's not that God is like coming over to punish you. You're not in the flow of where God's energy and life-giving spirit is.
Yeah.
You're choosing to be somewhere else.
Yeah.
And operate in some other way. That's not God so much punishing you as you not being in the space where life is happening, where something life-giving can happen for you.
And anytime you go against...
And life-giving don't have to be, I got a car. Life-giving can be, damn it, I don't know how I'm going to get out of bed this morning because the baby's crying, or, you know, my spouse just died, or I lost my job. You know, to me, the movement and presence of God is often much more in the micro scale. In the nudges and in the energy that helps you move ahead.
Yeah.
For someone who can find the strength somehow in the midst of grief or depression to just not kill themselves.
Yeah.
To just roll out of bed and get that one foot on the floor so you can get the day going. To not roll over and just hide under the blanket for another day. To be the addict who doesn't take that next drink next
year. Yeah.
You might take the third one, but the moment that you were able to resist the one, where does that come from?
See, we're getting on something else that...
For the slave that doesn't accept, I'm just supposed to get beat every day because, no, there's... Because if I got born into this, why would I think that's not normal? And yet, the slave gets a clue from somewhere that ends up having an underground railroad and folks running and ready to...
So did we talk about... Did we have a conversation about the meek inherit in the earth? Did I talk about
no,
that?
No, we did not.
Okay. So
you want to talk about that?
No. But
I was done.
When you talked about this notion or idea of finding, getting in tune with that source or that energy to move forward and to grow and evolve, made me think about. I have these debates about more. We talk about the development of morality in kids.
Yeah.
And we always just have this sort of overarching conversation about what does it mean to be moral.
Right.
In my classes, when we just debate social stuff that's happening or whatever.
Yeah.
And a part of what we'll talk about is the notion or idea that something will happen and somebody will say, "Oh, I could never do that. I could never cheat, or I could never kill him.
Yeah.
I could never kill anybody, or I could never cheat." Or,
right.
You know, I could never do those sort of things. And I said, well, that doesn't make you moral. Maybe that makes you weak.
Maybe.
And because you wouldn't cheat on your wife or your husband, that doesn't make you moral. Maybe that just makes you ugly.
Are you doing that because you're faithful or because you're just scared? If you're just scared, I'm less impressed.
And I think, and so back to that whole meek inheriting the earth.
Yeah.
From what I understand, that was a misinterpretation.
Mm-hmm.
That when God was talking about the meek inheriting the earth, he wasn't talking about poor people. That was a translation from "he who keeps his sword sheathed."
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like morality isn't not being able to do something. Morality is, I sure want to do it, but I'm not going to do it because
that's
it's
exactly
the right
it.
Thing to do.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
I'm capable of doing it. I might want to do it.
I have the motive, I have opportunity, I'm capable to do it, and I might even want to do it.
Right.
But I don't.
Right.
So when you talk about getting in tune with that energy, like you said, not taking that drink.
Right.
I want to hurt myself, but I'm going to get out of bed, and I'm going to give this life thing one more chance.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Going against, you know what I mean? All of these things that, all of these vices and things that pull us.
Yeah.
Or that we want to go in the wrong direction, finding that energy and getting in tune with it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? To sort of move in a positive direction.
Yeah.
Maybe that is.
I think when you, just to touch on suicide again real quick, because since we touched it, it's a sensitive thing. I think the other side of that is, I think for someone to commit suicide, I don't think of that as a sin, frankly. Because.
Which is, that is interesting.
Because, yeah, I mean, someone's always
that you sin.
To commit suicide.
That is the unforgivable sin, as we're always taught. And you're going straight to hell.
That's what the Catholic Church tells us, because you've killed something and you don't have a chance to repent for it.
Yeah.
That's a whole different thing to peel apart, because what if I cuss my mom out and get hit by a bus before I get to say I'm sorry? Is that, am I going to hell?
Good point.
someone will probably say, yeah, too bad for you. But yeah. No, to stay on suicide for just a minute, in terms of energy and wavelength and spirit, you have to recognize for someone to do that, it has to seem like a good idea at the moment.
Yeah.
No, I don't think anybody commits suicide unless they feel like in the moment, right or wrong, like this is the single last best option for my life.
Yeah.
And to have your own emotions or your own mind so scrambled that you can't pick up the frequency that gives you just that 1 minute of pause till you get your head a little bit clearer. You stay in that moment just long enough to go through with whatever you're trying to do.
Yeah.
And then you're done. And I feel like if we're talking about a God that knows everything, or I don't even like know in the sense of like brain, but who is experiencing with us what we're going through. I don't know. I think God has to be able to say when that person dies and gets where they're going, that God's going to say, yeah, I get it. I'm sorry you felt that way. I was hoping you'd pick up on the wavelength quick enough not to do it, but you did it. But I get it.
I think
go take a nap.
Yeah.
Am I going to hell? No, just no.
Yeah.
You've been in hell. Just come sit down at the table.
I'm
gonna make you a sandwich.
I think that when people commit suicide, they are turning toward, like they are turning to God for answers.
Well, in a way, I think that suicide, whatever, you know, is almost, it's a distortion of a proper response to say, I don't want life to be like this.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, in the moment, that was the only creative expression they could think of to do something different.
Yeah.
You know, and but it is an expression that says, life as it is, this ain't working.
Yeah.
A lot of us say that at different points, but some folks move to a different town or leave a relationship or quit a job or do whatever. But it's the expression behind it isn't wrong, but the chosen way of expressing it, unfortunately, is tragic.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't think just like we're talking about the atheists when saying there is no God or I don't believe in God. Well, I bet if we took a minute to take a survey of what you think God is, I might agree with you. We may want to talk about a different conception of God to see if it might work for you.
Yeah.
But it's the statement itself that life isn't working like this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll agree with you there.
Yeah.
I wish we could have found you some other creative way to resolve that, but yeah, I mean the statement in and of itself.
And typically the act is always done in a highly, highly emotional state.
Yeah.
It's always a pure,
which is interesting, because even
response,
in depression you can have a very highly emotional state.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be manic to be highly emotional. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
The energy of the emotion can be very a low feeling emotion, but it's still the magnitude of it. It's still severe.
It's usually an emotional decision and not a logical.
Yeah.
Not a.
They get the euthanasia.
I'm not trying to say people don't plan.
Euthanasia is a whole different conversation. But
yeah. I don't think, I'm not saying that people don't have logical plans and steps to take to go through with, you know, the act. In so much as I'm saying, the decision to do it is usually an emotional. Psychology is usually emotional.
Rarely do they do it at the time they made the plan. They may walk with that plan for years.
Yeah.
But when if I hit this spot and I can't get clear, if I can't pick up the frequency, if someone can't bring that frequency to me in a moment of compassion or to hear me or to be in touch with me, if I get enough time by myself in that state, then I got that plan I thought of. You know?
That's interesting. You keep saying frequency, and I talk about, when I talk to my kids, when I talk to people about emotions, I think of emotions as vibration and frequency. And that's how I explained to them. I said, I think that there are times when you are operating, I tell, you know, my kids or people, whoever, that there are times that you're operating in a low vibration and a high vibration.
Yeah.
And I said, when we're operating, when your cells and your mind are operating in a low vibration, we just gave it the term depression.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I said, you know, a part of, I think, what happens is, you know, if you think of yourself as vibrations, then you need to think about, how do I raise my vibrations?
Right.
which is why I think music is so powerful, because music is a vibration.
Yeah.
So I always tell my kids or anybody or myself, when I feel myself in a low vibrational state, I try to put myself in a high vibrational state.
Right.
And this is where, when I think of things like that,
yeah,
it makes me second guess laying hands on people. Well, it's a high vibe. If you're a high vibration and a low vibration, can you bring other people's vibrations up? Like we do it with music.
Laying
we can
on
do it
hands.
With sound.
Could be
we
a
can,
hug. Could be just presence. I think that laying on hands, I think there is something real to that. I think it is way overexploited and abused and imitated. But I think in and of itself as a possible principle, I think there's some validity to it.
Yeah.
Physical contact in general. Yeah. I don't know if it's true or not. This is your field. But I remember reading something about... it wasn't an experiment. It's a hopeful experiment, but they talked about these babies who were born in an orphanage that died because of the complete absence of physical contact.
That actually is how we sort of. Those are like seminal like psychological like research studies and stuff that we've done on contact comfort.
Yeah.
During World War II, all these fathers went to war, all these mothers went to work, and you had all these babies that was in orphanages that were like housed in like, you know, damn near like warehouses.
Yeah.
And they would feed a baby and change the baby, but these babies didn't get hugged and didn't get touched.
Yeah.
And when they tracked these kids and they looked at them emotionally, socially, psychologically, behaviorally, they had, I'm not saying they are good to be serial killers, but they had issues.
Yeah.
So that's when we know that touch matters.
Right.
When we talk about attachment, when we talk about temperament, when we talk about a lot of different things, like being touched matters emotionally, you know what I'm saying, to people. So I just wonder, again, when we talk about depressed people, I think that, you know, if we're taught to think about our emotions as vibrations, if we think about it in that way, that is something that can be fixed or changed. Again, that goes back to the thing I say all the time. I try to never think about why in life. I always think about what and how.
What's happening? Yeah.
I can fix what is happening. Yeah. I can fix what and I can fix how. You can't fix why because you might never know why.
You may never know why,
So it's like, what is happening to me? My cells, they are real physical things.
Right.
They're vibrating in a low state. I need to surround myself and immerse myself in a high vibrational state.
Right.
A certain type of music, a certain type of sound, around other happy people. When you get around happy people who are laughing, sometimes you ain't know what people laughing about. You see other people smiling and make you smile.
Right, right.
What is that?
Yeah.
That is, I don't care what anybody say, something is happening.
Right.
Yeah. Literally to see and feel the joy of someone else can make you feel a certain way.
Right. You can't work it out empirically, but again, qualitatively,
exactly.
It's happening. Yeah.
What is there and what is that, you know? And so, and I just think that part of the problem is we're in a space and a place right now, scientifically, that there's so many things that we don't have the tools to measure.
Yeah.
There's so many spectrums that are there. There's so many spectrums spiritually, mentally, and emotionally that we haven't even tapped into.
Right.
We're just figuring out what autism is.
Yeah.
And that there is a spectrum of autism.
Right.
And so when I think about the spectrum of being autistic, I'm like, how many other range of emotions and behaviors is there a spectrum that we haven't even tapped into, we have no idea about, you know what I'm saying? And I just think that, again.
Well, I think that a lot. My wife, and I talk about this a lot because she's a therapist, so I think about like schizophrenia.
Yeah.
It's like, are you just crazy? Or are your wires just bare?
See,
are you just picking up stuff that you have no way to filter or control or manage?
That's what I
I'm not saying that that's what it is, but I wonder.
I see it that once.
No, we used to make that person a witch doctor and go put them up on a hill in the village and go ask them stuff and take them cattle. Yeah. And whatever crazy thing they said, we go, okay, that's what I'm going to go do. But I think about that.
I said that years ago, and these two other psychologists, they looked at me like I was crazy.
Huh.
And I said, it's like if I'm at home watching Channel 30, and I turn to Channel 40, Channel 30 didn't disappear. It's still there.
Right.
I'm just tuned into another frequency. And I just wonder if, for whatever reason, there are people in this world that sort of can tune into other frequencies. And I said, I wonder, are you really schizophrenic, or do you just have the ability to tune into other frequencies that may be around you?
This may not happen with technologies now, but it used to be sometimes the TV would pick up two channels at the same time.
Yeah.
And like, so they're both trying to make sense on the screen. You didn't say your TV was crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
But you knew how to make mechanical adjustments that you can't make on a human brain. At least we can't yet.
Yeah.
I just wonder. I could be wrong. But I wonder about that. And I think about we were talking about the touch and the potential damage that the lack of having that need filled can cause to somebody. And then you have somebody on the spectrum who almost can't bear but the minimal amount of contact without being overexcited.
Yeah.
I'm not saying
you got I don't know if you're talking about empaths, but yeah. Those are people who can literally feel the emotion of other people. They're so sensitive.
Yeah. But with people on the spectrum, like sometimes like physical contact, they might, you know, I might lose it.
Yeah.
Or I may need a certain amount, like the weighted blanket or certain stimulus.
Yeah.
But then other things just like send them off.
Yeah.
And it's not that I'm not crazy, but that amount of stimulus, you're way overfeeding my processors.
Yeah.
And that's all it is. If I can get a space where I can function where I can bear the frequency, then I'll be okay. And that's what you work with. You don't fix autism or Asperger's. You try to figure out, how do I help you navigate a life overstimulated so that you can keep on your frequency and not lose yourself?
And that's a part of what autistic people are trying to do when they, you've seen autistic people that will repeat things over and over and over. Yeah. Or sometimes I think that's a reaction to being overstimulated and trying to control.
Trying to ground myself. Yeah.
And that's exactly what they say it feels like.
You do that with electricity, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, it keeps coming up. I don't think God's a thunderstorm. But I think there's a lot to be said to think about spiritually as we observe what energy does and how it works. And you don't say, well, why is there thermonuclear energy? It just is. It is. Nobody's trying to solve energy. Matter of fact, we gave up on that. We just say, energy can't be created or destroyed, just transformed.
Yeah.
That's not an answer. Yeah. That answer is nothing about how it got here. We're content to just understand how it does what it does.
And that's the thing about a lot of things in life. I think people don't understand, like, you know, I always say, in Love and Relationship Show, somebody, one of the first
questions. Love and Relationship Show.
One of the first questions that people asked me was, what is love? And I said, I think that love is like gravity.
Yeah.
And I said, we don't know what gravity is.
Mm-mm.
We know what it does.
Yeah.
We know what it makes things do. We know how it affects things, but we don't know what it is. And I said, I think that love is the same thing. We don't know what it is. We know how it makes people act. We know how people respond to it. Yeah. We know how we feel when we think we're in it.
Right.
But we don't know what it is. And I think that that's the case with a lot of things in this world. Like, we don't know what they are. You don't know what water is. You know what it's comprised of. You know what it does. You know what it can't do. You know how it reacts. But what it is.
But you can break it down to, it's quarks. And then it's these other particles that have weak and strong forces. Okay. But why?
Yeah.
you can trace back. You're telling me how.
Yeah.
You're not giving me why.
Yeah.
And you get down to a particle y'all can't break down anymore, and you can't do a why.
And there are some things that we just...
And love is the same way. I think it's interesting because it's for a different show, but I feel like when someone says, you know, why do you love this person? If you were going to give the honest answer, you'd have to say, I don't know. But that sounds so awful in our society.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, I just do. Because if you start naming things... No one ever means to say it's this thing and this thing alone. You don't mean these things exclusively.
Yeah.
But when you get down to naming things and you really love somebody and you were to say, what if that wasn't there? Well, it's still love. Well, she's beautiful. What if she wasn't beautiful? I'd still love her.
Yeah.
Okay, but what is and I think it's something that the real answer has to be, I don't know.
Yeah.
Same reason if you ask the moon why it's swirling around the earth, well, it's gravity. Well, how come that's working? I don't know.
I got a theory about the love thing.
But I can't help it. I feel like myself when I'm in this orbit, whether that's with my wife, whether it's with God, whether it's in community, whether it's us vibing right now like this, I feel like myself. Mm-hmm. I feel, and I don't have a better word than that. Right or good, I guess, would work, but the word I like is, this feels like who I'm supposed to be.
Yeah.
And to me, that... I don't have a better description than that.
See, that's what I think. I think we always try to put. We have to define things in some way. Again, that same show.
Yeah.
What is love? Trying to answer the question, what is love? And I said after I said the gravity explanation, I said honestly, I said philosophically and spiritually, I think love is a signal or a vibration. Mm-hmm. Back to the word vibration. I think love is the signal of vibration that we feel when we're coming across another spirit or soul that we're supposed to learn from.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I said, why else? What I said, what else would hold you to somebody?
Yeah.
You know, so long enough to have whatever experience you're supposed to have.
Right.
Like, I think that there are people in our lives who we're meant to have bad experiences from to learn and grow and evolve.
Sure.
Well, yeah, who's going to, at the first sight of something bad happening, we would leave.
Yeah.
What keeps you to that person? Right. This notion or idea of love. Yeah. And have you noticed that when the lesson is over, you don't love them no more?
That's true. Look, folks, like, get along. Yeah, yeah. They couldn't get along when they was too close in orbit.
Yeah, yeah. So, so it's like when the experience is over, all of a sudden you don't love them no more. Well, the whole purpose of you feeling like you love that person was because you were supposed to come together with them to learn and grow or to have some sort of life experience so you could grow and evolve in some way. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It's, so whatever that energy is that you think that you feel that draws you to somebody, we just so happen to call it love. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I've said that to couples I work with, that you will you may find the thing that maybe most aggravates you about your spouse might be the thing that part of you most wants to learn from.
Yeah.
I think when you get spouses, especially that are in different places as far as how they react to stuff, where one's a little more high-strung, one's a little more laid back.
See, the problem with this conversation is then we get into this conversation of predeterminism.
Yeah.
So in that case, what you're trying to say is we was meant to be, I was meant to meet this person, and I was supposed to meet this person. It was maybe mapped out so we could run across it. So then, here again, I have no control. I have no control now.
There could be multiple people you could come across and have affinity for a number of different reasons.
Well, I believe that, which is why I believe you have multiple soulmates.
Yeah, like people talk about soulmates. Not only there's like a person that God says, I want this person to learn from this person, and hopefully they bump into each other. No, I think that there are multiple possibilities to catch some kind of orbit with somebody. I don't think it has to be a person, you know, one sun and one earth. I mean, the sun's got multiple planets, but that's a whole different story. Yep. I'm gonna get into pansexualism, but but no, I don't agree there's just a one, which I think some people go, boo. But I think there can be somebody, not just a somebody, that you click with like that. And then we talked about marriage being more than love, and I think that's because you go beyond this space to decide we're going to stay in orbit together. And you decide that I'm going to keep learning from and with this person. I think you get to a point, I would hope for folks, that as we become a together, that we're going to, whatever else we're going to learn from whomever else, we are going to do that as a binary.
Yeah.
We may orbit other groups of folks, and we'll orbit some children, or they'll orbit us, or whatever it may be, but you decide whether or not you're going to do that orbiting together.
Yeah.
Or if you don't make the intentional decision to do that, other things will pull at your orbit. And that's why we grew apart. Well, that's entirely possible. If you weren't keeping an intentional decision to stay with this person and as you orbited whatever else was happening in your life, you may get pulled apart. And there may be some cases like you're saying, and this is why I think you have to be careful about being too quick on those kinds of lifelong commitment decisions, which are, just to be honest, it sounds unromantic, those are human institutional constructs.
Yeah,
That's a whole different thing from what we're talking about. But to engage yourself in that thing that becomes institutionally, socially binding with someone who maybe you don't need to be in orbit with forever.
Yeah.
You know, some things do have a natural end, at least as far as their closeness. At least as far as, like you were saying, the lesson you're supposed to learn.
Yeah.
And then you can roll on, because otherwise you're just together for no reason. But I think there's a lot of ways you can look at that whole idea, that whole feeling, I think, of orbits and affinities and poles and magnetism, however you want to put it. But I don't think there has to be a one. I think the idea of soulmates can be, there may be a number of folks as you move through life that you could resonate with in such a way that you could stay in resonance together for a while.
I definitely agree with
you. Yeah. That's so much less romantic. But I think the alternative is to go with something so romantic that you set folks up for a life of confusion and frustration and perhaps misery.
How much more easier would our lives be if we all held that perspective? And what my original... So,
if everyone thought like us, everything would be great. That was good.
I didn't mean it like that, but no, that was my original question for my original question for the day.
Yeah,
was before we burn up an hour. But right. But no, but my original question for the day was, why is life so hard?
Yeah,
I wanted us to just sit and talk about why do we make life so much more complicated than it actually is?
Not why is life so hard. Why do we make life
why do we make life so much complicated? And I wonder if we viewed love, if we all viewed love and we all viewed spirituality, if we viewed everything as a growing and learning experience.
Right, yeah. It's process.
And not... Maybe, see, that's what I'm saying. Like, there are bits and pieces of truth and all the... Like, no one doctrine, I think... holds total truth. Like, that's why I think the Buddhists got it right. Like,
right.
This parting piece about attachment. We get so attached to stuff.
Yeah.
And maybe it's if we can take things for what they are. My son, you know, Caleb, as a girlfriend.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm just like, enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
Don't think about tomorrow or if y'all gonna be next week or next month or next year.
Yeah.
I said, this is a learning and growing experience for you.
Yeah.
Just enjoy the moment.
Yeah.
Just have fun, enjoy the moment, and learn from this situation and this experience what you should. And I said, honestly, son, chances are maybe y'all move on and get married and live together forever. I don't know.
Right.
There's a very good chance that may not happen.
Right.
And if it doesn't, all isn't lost. The question is, what did you learn from this experience? How did you grow and evolve from it? Everyone that you meet in this lifetime, all these situations, you know, God and the universe puts in front of you so you can learn and grow. I said, maybe you're having this relationship now as a trial run so you can learn some things to set you up for the person who's really
goodness.
Meant for you. You know what I'm saying?
Some folks do that, but I can't imagine without the lessons I learned. My apologies to the folks who came before without the lessons I learned in previous relationships.
But the thing is, would we not be so devastated at our failures or what we label as failures and disappointments if we just looked at them as learning experiences?
Oh, you
know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Would we not be so bummed out about not getting this job?
Yeah.
Because this, you know, this set me up to, you know, this played an important part in the development of motivation to do something else later, or, you know, this relationship that didn't work out, it taught me what it means to really love somebody, or, you know what I'm saying? And that's not to say that we shouldn't get disappointed, or we shouldn't be sad, or we shouldn't cry when things happen to us, but I wonder if just having a different perspective...
Oh, definitely, because I think we tend to, whatever the good thing is we just got, we want that good thing to be forever, whether it's the person or the job or the... When things are good... We tend to, somewhere in our head, go, how do I make sure this never stops being how it is?
Yeah.
Now, when I get to that, I'm setting myself up to eventually look at the world as a disastrous place because I can't make that happen. We're back to the beginning. So I don't have control to make that happen.
Yeah.
I simply do not. People die. Jobs phase out. I get in a wreck. I think you have to be able to come to terms with... looking at the world and saying, I can't control what's going to happen. I have no control over what's going to happen outside of me.
Yeah.
I have no, regardless of what my faith may say, I have no guaranteed way to ensure that God will do what I want God to do with creation all around me every day for the rest of my life. I can't guarantee that. No matter how blessed and highly favored I think I am, I can't guarantee that when I wake up every morning, that God's been just having right over my head all by myself.
Yeah.
And if that means you don't get a job or you don't get to eat or you don't get a good parking space or you don't get whatever.
Yeah.
No. So it is, in fact, out of my control. And so this is, again, we don't talk about this, but this is one place where some of the other Eastern faiths and Christianity I don't say Christian. I'm going to say the teachings of Jesus, because they're not always the same. They should be, okay. But they're not.
Now, you know, that's a whole other show.
That's a whole other show.
That you got to, and it's going to take
idea
some
is
time.
Of, as I read what Jesus is saying and what he does, it's the idea that the one place I have control is what I'm going to choose to do and how I'm going to choose to be as I move through this world.
Yeah.
The only place I have any real initiative is what I'm going to do. How I'm going to respond or how I'm going to work proactively. It's the only place I have any control. And so that's where I'm going to focus. I'm going to resign. This gets a little bit Buddhist. I'm going to resign the rest to vanity.
Yeah.
I'm going to resign the rest to nothingness. But then for some folks, they would say, well, because I'm going to say that my job, my wife, whatever, may not be tomorrow, I'm going to do nothing about it. No. Again, this is choice.
Yeah.
That I'm going to choose to invest myself completely in whatever's in front of me. What are you going to do tomorrow? I don't know. Whatever's in front of me, I'm going to choose to invest myself in it completely in a way that as best I understand, is going to be life-giving or enhancing or on wavelength with what I understand God to be. And for me, that comes from what some folks would call meditation, what I call prayer, which isn't just giving God a laundry list, but being still.
Yeah.
In what is to me God's presence, so that I can feel what that feels like, that stillness, that peace, that strength, whatever it is, so that as I go through the rest of my day, decision by decision, person by person I deal with, I can get a sense of whether I'm moving with that flow or outside of that flow. As my mom used to say, I'd put my Bible down. Well, you feel what it's like when you make that decision. You know you're doing that. You're acknowledging the fact that that's not what I was supposed to do.
Yeah.
You don't need a rule book to tell you that.
Yeah.
But if you never spend any time trying to be attuned to what peace is inside of you, which means you have to peel all this other stuff off and get down to who you are.
Yeah.
If you can never nurture that enough, practice that enough, which is what all these great spiritual minds have figured out how to do, it's less about knowing the truths of the universe. It's having a feel for what it feels like when I'm in line with it or when I'm not.
Yeah.
And they take that moment by moment. They don't write down a full doctrine, because a doctrine misses it, because a doctrine is static. We're talking about energy. That's dynamic.
Yeah.
You know, I can't say I will give $5 to every poor person I see, because a guy I saw yesterday asked for some change and I had $5. So therefore, as a doctrine, I must know.
Yeah.
What can I do in the moment to be as true as I can be to what I feel to be the right good thing to do, because it's right and good, not because I'm trying to catch some blessing and highly favored business later. I don't want a bucket of fried chicken because I, you know.
All right, again. So I guess to wrap things up again, what was all of this about? And I guess ultimately what it boiled down to, brass tacks, we talked about power and control.
Yeah.
Like power, control, and the nature of God, whatever God is, or your brand, if you want to say God, the universe, or whatever, what is the nature of it? Is it hands off? Does it play an active part in our lives? Or is it hands off and it just kind of sits and watches as we make a mess of the world and make a mess of our lives? I think that's a good thing to debate. You know what I mean? For those that are out there that are listening, it'd be nice to know what you think. So let us know what you think. Hit us up on the email. Email us at synergykhjh@gmail.com. That's synergykhjh@gmail.com. synergykhjh@gmail.com. Let us know what you think. Let us know what you think of the nature of, and if you think that there is no God, just let us know what you think about the nature of life, the nature of us, the nature of being. But if you think there is, it doesn't have to be God in the sense of a, you know, however you think about the universe, or if you think there's a larger presence, let us know what you think the nature of whatever it is and the role that it plays in our lives. So we'll probably wrap it up here. Joe's going to take us out. But again, this is Keelan Hinton. And I want to say, again, you could have been anywhere doing anything else, but you decided to take a few minutes out of your day to listen to us ramble and talk and debate and contemplate all things spiritual, consciousness, lifestyle, and everything in between. I just want to let you know I appreciate you, and peace and blessings to everybody out there listening.
Yeah, and like we said from the beginning, we don't mean to be the folks giving you definitive answers. I do like that question of how good would the world be if everybody just thought like we did. But that's you know, we're just joking. But this conversation is all of our conversations. It's just us offering conversation for you all to join in with. So we look forward to hearing from you, and we'll be with you next time.
I can sing you the storyline, and if you like my story, fine. But ain't none of the glory mine. See, my life was a lonely one, and I was dear mama's only son, with no idea what I'm gonna become. And I didn't have long to know that you don't have to be grown to go. I could have died so long before. Then I finally saw the sign, and I made it on down the line.